And where are we holding?
We're learning Masechet Sanhedrin on Kaf Tet Amud Aleph 29a, a new Mishnah, new and exciting Mishnah. Oh, Hashem's help, let's have a look what we're going to learn today. So, the Mishnah says as follows. Ketzad bodkim et ha'edim. How do they examine the witnesses? Need to know how you examine witnesses. Halacha, and what you have to do, and what you say to them, what you don't say to them. And don't make it up as you go along. You have to learn everything has rules, including how you examine the witnesses. What do you do? So this is a procedure. Hayu machnisin otan. They would bring them into a room. Ma'ayamin aleihem. Ma'ayamin aleihem is a strange word to use. It means to threaten, to violence. It's the best translation they use over here is to intimidate. We intimidate the witnesses. Right? Certainly weren't allowed to redo this in court here. But you intimidate them.
I thought they do that all the time.
Not overtly. Here, it's overt. Here, here's some other judges. Right? There's two ways of trying a case. There's what's known as bli neder, from what I remember from my law days. There's the English way and there's a French way. There's probably many other examples as well, but there are two examples of two different systems of a court case. So the English way is that you bring in lawyers, advocates, and they argue the case. They're the ones who put the arguments for and against. Right? It's called the adversarial system. So I learned a bit of law as well today. Whereas the French way is different. The French don't rely on the lawyers to make the case. They rely on the judges. The judges are effectively the ones who are arguing for and against. Right? And they have lawyers, but the lawyers have a much more secondary role. They're not there to convince the judges as to how to rule. Right? The judges have their own. The judge is the arbiter, if you like, and I'll ask you what I want to ask. And in the French, the judge asks the questions. Right? The judge examines the witnesses. But in our system, in the English system, the American system too, it's the lawyers that examine the witnesses. Right, the witness is on the stand, and he's examined by the lawyer of the other side. Right, he's questioned or whatever. Not so in this system, in the Jewish system. He's examined by the judges. The judges are the ones asking the questions. So more like the French, exactly. The French system where the judges examine the witness. Right, it's a different thing going on. Ours, the judge just sits there and watches the thing going on. Probably plays on his iPhone, goes to sleep, whatever. Just right. Is it finished yet? He's guilty, right? But the judge has to ask the questions he wants to ask. Because the judge could be sitting there. The truth is, even in the English cases, the judge can also ask questions that weren't asked. Right? But you leave it to the lawyers, and at the end, when the lawyer's finished, and the judge is still scratching his head, but why didn't you ask him if he killed him? Or like something obvious. So the judge will say, well, wait a minute. The judge will ask, but that'll be at the end, it'll be like wrap up. It won't be the. Anyway, so in the Jewish way, the judges examine the witnesses. They examine them in a way which makes it very clear to them that there's a big penalty to pay if you're lying. You've seen the Gemara, some of the things that the judge would say, right? In order to frighten them, so to speak, into you better be telling the truth, otherwise you're going to be in trouble. So what would they do? So they would bring him into a room and they would intimidate them. Umatzin et kol ha'adam l'chutz. They would then take everyone out. Umashirin et hagadol shebahen. And they would leave the biggest one amongst them. We're talking here the witnesses. They would throw out to everybody else. All the other witnesses would leave. You might have more than two witnesses. If there's only two witnesses, so you take one out. But if there's more than a number of witnesses, you take out all of them apart from one witness, and now you examine that one witness. You don't examine a witness in front of the other witnesses. right? Because then he's going to learn. They're going to learn what the testimony is. If you came together to lie, so you want to know what answers he gave, so that you can give the same answers. So you don't let the other witnesses in at the same time, in order to be able to test them. Well, he didn't say that. He said it was 3 o'clock, and you said it was 2 o'clock. He said it was, you know, raining, and you said it was sunny. Whatever, right? So we don't let the other witnesses in. But the litigants are there. You're not allowed to examine a witness not in front of the litigants. So they're in there. When it says everybody else is taken out, it just means the other witnesses are taken out. Say that?
Why the gadol?
Oh, so why do we start with the gadol? It's a good question. Right, so it could be, I'm just looking for, no, it could be just a question of kavod, or it could be the, have a look.
The gadol thing is kavod and honor, or size, he might be intimidating to the others for some reason, that's why you question him first.
And who determines that?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, it may be that there isn't a gadol, right? If you've just got two guys from the street, there's no reason that the one's gadol than the other. Don't know. It's a good question. Don't know what gadol. What's the gadol? Okay. But on Rimla, we say to him, Amor hechata yodea shezeh chayev lezeh. So we start with a not very threatening question. We hear those planes over here.
Can I close this?
That's an interesting. Not unless they're celebrating someone's birthday or they're showing off to the secretary of nonsense from some country, that they bring out those planes over your shrine. Unusual, Todd.
It's too bad they're practicing carpet bombing.
Could be. BB's going to the Bahamas for a holiday. Anyway, Tov, other good things. Tov, so this is what they say to him. So first of all, they don't say to him something very threatening. They say to him, tell us how you know that this one is liable to that one. Tov, Imamar, if he replies, this is a witness, if he replies, Hu amar li shani chayev lo. If he says, the witness says, how do I know? Because he told me that he owes him money. For example, owes him money. It doesn't have to be owing money, but that's the example that we're going to use for the, because that's the main example. If he says that he told me that he owes him money, or ish ploni amar li shehu chayev lo, or someone else told me that he owes him money, lo amar klum. Both of those statements are not good witness statements. The second one is clearer. The second one we don't allow in our court system either. The second one's called hearsay. If you say that someone else told me, and you're not a witness. Someone else told me he saw the whole thing. That's very nice. Go and bring the guy who saw the whole thing. No, just because someone told you, that's secondary evidence, and we don't allow that, even in modern court. But the first one, we would allow in the modern court system. The first one is where he says, the guy told me he did it. I was sitting in the pub with him, and he said, you know what I did this morning? And he told me everything he did. That's admissible evidence in a modern court. You can hang someone on that, right? But for us, we don't allow that. Certainly we don't allow in this case, the case of money. He said he said I owed him money. You're chatting to someone, and he says, you know what? I owe Moshe $1,000. And then there's a dispute in court. You go to court and say, well, he told me that he owed it. Doesn't count for anything. Why not? So, Rashi explains, Lo maklum, David inish, the people act, Da'ma ploni nosebi, Kadesha lo yachaziku ashir. People say stuff so that they don't appear to be rich. Right? If someone comes along and says, nice car, you must be doing okay, right? And you say to him, It's not actually mine. My brother-in-law lent it to me. Or whatever. It's not true. My brother-in-law didn't lend it to me. It's not his car. I'm just saying it so that I don't appear rich. Same thing can be true if I say that I owe someone money. Right? If someone comes collecting, you look to like, you can give me a very nice donation. Actually, no. I actually owe a lot of money. At the moment, I owe Moshe $100,000. So, it looks like I'm actually very much in debt. So, Gemara understands that people say stuff. And you can't rely on that as evidence against them. That's not good evidence. It's as if he said nothing. Lama klum. Add until sheyomav faneinu hodalo, until he says the faneinu hodalo, in our presence he admitted it. Shehu chayav lo matanzus.
Now, would this be the equivalent of the two witnesses or a witness signing a star document saying, I'm borrowing money from so and so, or so and so is lending me money?
Sorry, I wasn't paying full attention. Tell me again.
Is this the same?
Yeah.
As if
which when you say this means the last thing we read.
Right. The defendant admits to the plaintiff in our presence that he owes him 200 zuz.
Yeah.
Is that the same as if the witness was signing a star, a document on a loan?
No. A star is much stronger. Star is very good proof unless you can prove it's a forgery. Unless you can prove it's a forgery, it's an accepted done.
So this is one level below.
Yeah, we've got here. We have to believe that they're telling the truth. The star is automatic.
Incontrovertible.
I was going to say incontrovertible, but then I changed my mind because it is controvertible if you can prove it's a forgery. But on the absence of a forgery, it's here we have to test the witnesses to believe that they're true. So they're a stage down.
But normally you would do a star for more than 30 days, but under 30 days you would do a verbal agreement. So this would probably be for like a 30-day loan.
Ah, could be. Or it could be that it's a greater than that and he just doesn't have a star. Because if you don't have a star, like you lost it or it got destroyed, and you can bring witnesses instead. It could be either way, yeah. So here, what's he saying here? So here's different. Here he's saying, he admitted in our presence that he owes him 200 zuz. But didn't we just say, what's the difference? Because I just said before, if he says to you, I admit that I owe him money, he said nothing. And now the Gemara is saying, no, if he says he admitted in our presence that he owes him 200 zuz, then that's good testimony. So what's the difference?
The key thing is that it's also in the presence of the defendant is in the presence of the plaintiff.
The defendant, yes, you're right.
So you not only have the plaintiff, you have the defendant and the witnesses.
Right.
And that's the key.
Indeed. So here, we've got the other guy there. We've got the other guy present. So he's admitting it in the presence of the other guy. We're going to see in the Gemara that also the witness, he has to say it in a way which indicates that he's appointing these two people as witnesses. He's either acknowledging directly or indirectly, and that you two are the witnesses to that fact. Meaning he's not just saying it in jest, even if he was in front of the other guy, the plaintiff, the defendant, right? And he said it, you're right, I owe you $1,000. And there were two guys there standing watching. That wouldn't be enough if it wasn't said in a way which indicated that he expected to be bound by it.
So
either by saying directly, and I'm appointing you two as witnesses, or there's another opinion that he doesn't have to say that explicitly, that I'm putting you two as witnesses. He has to say it in a way which is understood that I realize that you're going to be witnesses to this.
Now, can he appoint the witnesses before he says that?
Yeah. Yeah. Just has to be in a way which you can because otherwise it could be that he said it in jest. Someone says, you owe me $1,000, and the other guy says, yeah, you're right, I do owe you $1,000, haha, right? And two guys are standing there saying, oh well, there we go, and they're off to court. He said it, right? Two witnesses, your stuff, right? But he didn't mean it in in that way. Okay, so that's the beginning of the process. Next, achalkach, afterwards, machnisim et hasheni, we bring in the second guy, the second witness, ubodkim oto, and then we examine him too. Im nimsa'u divreihem mechuvanim, if they're found to be together, right, to correspond, the statement. Nosim v'notnin b'davar, we do maser matan. Nosim meaning we don't. In American law, that means we do a plea bargain, right? Nosim matan, we bargain, but it doesn't mean we bargain. It means we talk about it. We go backwards and forwards. We discuss, deliberate on the matter. Right, the meaning it's not just accepted, it's then deliberated as to see whether or not it's correct. Now, how do we get to a verdict? So the Gemara gives the options. Shnai mamrim zakai, if two out of the three say zakai, he's innocent, not liable. V'chadomer chayav, but one of them says he is guilty, he is liable. Zakai, he goes, he's innocent, right? 2-1.
Majority rule,
very clear. Shnai mamrim chayav, if two say he's guilty, v'chadomer zakai, and one says innocent. Chayav, he's guilty, 2-1, same thing. But echad omer chayav ve'echad omer zakai. If one says guilty and one says innocent, or afilu shnayim mezakin or shnayim mechayvin, or even two of them say guilty and two of them say innocent, ve'echad, the third one omer eini yodea, says I don't know. Yosefin hadayanim, we add people to the court, right? We need to have a judgment of three. So even if you've already got two, and you know that you're going to win with a 2-1 majority, it doesn't really matter what the third guy says. But the third guy says, you know what, I don't know. It's not clear to me. We can't accept the two-man rule to declare a judgment on that basis. Why? Because we need to have a three-man baked in. We haven't got a three-man baked in here. We've got a two-man baked in, and one guy doesn't know what's going on. If he can't make a decision, he doesn't count as a judge.
The obvious question is, when do you know the deliberation ends? Maybe he wants to deliberate more.
So he might do, right. If he doesn't know after the deliberations, right, because the deliberations is part of it before you get to this, they deliberated and these two guys, the two judges are like, clear, 100%. What do you think? He's like, nah, I don't know. No, just don't. I can't give a ruling. Then what happens? We add Yossi Finn. How many do we add?
One.
No.
Oh, two.
Why? It would make sense just to add one. Switch him up. Get another one in. Right?
Yeah.
No. So why do we add two? Because we need. Because he's not taken out. If he was taken out, we were replacing him. So we'd add one. But we're not replacing him. He just doesn't know yet. Meaning he's still part of the judging team. He still stays on the case. We bring in two more people.
Didn't we cover earlier that he can't once he's out?
He's not out. He can still decide. We add more in, and he can still deliberate with them.
But we covered it earlier that if we're adding a judge, he can't make the final decision or something like that.
Let's have a look. No, according to this footnote 18, second paragraph, he still takes part in and can make a decision. So even if two were said guilty, and he said I don't know, and we added another two, then the three of them together can overrule the first two. Three of them can then say change their mind. Right, the first two say guilty, third guy says I don't know. So we add two judges, and in the end, the three of them say not guilty. The one who was undecided.
He's
not done. We're not done with him. He just hasn't yet been able to make his mind up to formulate a decision. Either way.
I know we covered this before.
Yeah. And if one of their it may be that we only need one of them to actually have a decision, and then we've got a three-man Beitin. I don't know if we need all five. Do we need all five? I can't remember.
Yeah, wasn't it 3, 5, 7?
We keep adding until we get to up to 70. We can add.
The third one's not going to have any.
But only if it was equal. Only if it was equal.
The third one's not going to change the final decision.
What's third one?
If you have two. But usually you have three. One is silent.
Yes.
It's not going to change. The decision is you have two.
Two strikes against, yes.
Oh, yeah, two more on in case the third one who was signed wants to say something.
So
if one of the two new ones doesn't want to say something, you'd have to keep on adding on.
So that I'm not sure.
Because it doesn't matter whether his decision doesn't influence.
No, so the question is this. In the case of now we've added, if we have three people deciding, then we have a three-man Beitin.
Yeah.
So it might be okay. It might be because that's why I don't know. Or not.
So you need three people.
That's the reason. Saying something. Right, that three decides. And that's why we added the first one in the But it might still be that if we move up to five, then we need I don't know.
I think we need not two. One is for the two.
But we covered this earlier.
We did, but when we covered it earlier, we covered it because there was it was equal numbers in the capital case, and we kept adding until they got a majority. I don't think it was because.
I'm trying to remember where it is.
I don't think it was because.
Because I remember anyone added would have to hear the original testimony.
Yeah, they have to sit. They have to come from the bench. Just says we need three. Doesn't say we must have. We add two. Needs three. Apparently, that seems to be the.
Yeah, 3, 5, 7, 9.
You just need the three. So once you've added two more, it doesn't matter if one or two of those are undecided, as long as you've got three stuff at the end of the day.
Three who say something.
Who say something appears to be. Blineda appears to be the law. Okay. Yofi, top. Next. Gamuret Adavar. When they finish, right, they made a decision. What do they do? Ayumach Nisinotan. They bring them in, right? So we see from here that they don't deliberate in front of them. Right? They deliberate, they go off into their room, like they do. If you go to Shimon HaTzadik here, you can see the cave of the Sanhedrin next to it. It's open. All the little rooms, the little side rooms and whatever. See where the judges sat here, and then they go off here, and it's nice. That's Hashem, we'll do our siyum, our sechet in that cave. That would be nice.
You went into it then?
Huh?
You went into it?
Yeah. Sometimes it's open. If you're lucky.
Yeah, yeah, three years.
If that's a chance. I'm not going anywhere. I'm not planning. Anyway, tough. Hashem should help us. Tough. Okay, so what happens? When they finish, they bring them in. Hagadol shebadayanim omer, the gadol of the dayanim. So the dayanim have a gadol as well, right? There's the foreman of the, whatever, the head judge. And he says, Ishponi atazakai, or Ishponi atachaya. Right? He says, Mr. So and so, Mr. Smith, we declare you're guilty. Mr. Smith, we declare you're innocent. Right? The head judge declares. Why? In order that no one knows who gave the decision. Right? Anonymous. So the head judge, he's the spokesperson, we decided. Right? Nowadays, certainly in UK law, you can ask for the judgment. Right? They either give their judgment anyway, or you can ask for it. Right? And it gets published. And you get the three judges, and they explain their reasoning. Which is probably useful, because otherwise, you know, you can see who actually knows what they're talking about, and who's a decent judge. Right? But you get to see, he went against you, he went for you. But here, no. We accept the matter. We accept it. Minash Amayan, there's no one to blame. I'm not going to go and chase after him and say, wait a minute. Okay. Umanayan lekashiyetze lo yomar. How do we know, from where do we know, that when he leaves, meaning a judge, lo yomar, he shouldn't say, he shouldn't say, I would have let you off. Sorry, mate. I was for you, but the other two voted against me. What can I do? Sorry. Right? How do we know that he's not allowed to say that? Maybe he's allowed to say that if he wants. You're right. He disagreed. He's allowed to say that he disagreed. He doesn't want the guy to be upset with him. Right? How do we know he's not allowed to say that? What does he also say? He says, I found you innocent, but it was my colleagues who found you guilty. But what can I do that my colleagues outnumbered me? Right? Where do we learn the source for that? About this it's said. Why is that in brackets? Let me just see. Some versions have this bit deleted. Others delete the following verse. Okay, so we're not sure which one is the, depends on your version of the Mishnah, which one the source is. Lo teilech rachil ba'amecha, don't be a gossiper amongst your people. Or the other passage which says, holech rachil megalesod, a person who goes around gossiping reveals secrets. Right? Either way, we see that you're not allowed to gossip, right? Rechilus. Right, there are different forms of Lashon Hara. One of them is called Rechilus. Rechilus is spreading information which is not necessarily it's true, right? If it was false, it would be something else. If it was false, it would be Motsi Shemra, it would be Sheker, it would be lying. It's not called Rechilus. Rechilus is true, right? Like all Lashon Hara, most of Lashon Hara, it's true. But it's not necessarily damaging per se, but we don't go around spreading stuff which can cause people to be upset or can cause
But isn't that 99% of the news?
Right, and therefore your brain is now telling you, therefore ..
Don't turn on the news.
Yofi. Okay. Gemara. Heichi amrinam lehu. This is what we say to them, right? The mission told us that we intimidate the witnesses, right? So the mission didn't say exactly how you do that. It just said you ask them, why do you think he's guilty? Right? It's not very intimidating. But the Gemara now explains. We have a few different opinions on what exactly we tell them in order to put the proverbial fear of God into them. Amar Rabbi Huda. Rabbi Huda says like this. Hafi Amri Nanhu. This is what we tell them. Okay, so we have here a pasuk from Mishlei, which says, Nasiyin, Nasiyim, V'ruach, V'geshem, Ayin. Clouds and wind, but there's no rain. Ish mithalel, v'matat sheker. When a man takes pride in a dishonest gift. What does he mean? He means, what's it, the dishonest gift is the false judgment that a witness tries to procure, right? You're not even for him, right? He's doing it for his friend, right? That he's lying for his friend. So, and because of that, there's no rain, right? You're gonna cause there to be no rain, famine, whatever. If you were to testify and get a false benefit from your testimony. Job. Very nice. Amale Rava. Rava said to him, to Rabbi Huda, Yachli Lameimar. He can say the following. Right? The witness could respond either explicitly, if he's argumentative, or internally, he's got an answer to that. He could say, Shav Shnehava Kafna Va'ababa Umana Lo Khalif. There can be a 7 years of famine, Shav meaning Sheva, Shnehava Kafna. 7 years of famine. Vababa, right? Umana, the door of the craftsman, lochalif, we don't enter. Meaning, it doesn't enter, sorry. Right? Even though there's famine in the fields, person who has a profession is not affected by it. Even though it's a 7 year famine, right? So, Ke'ili, what's he saying here? That this statement is not so threatening to a person. You're right. You're trying to scare the person and say, look, if you testify falsely, there's going to be a famine. And he can say to himself, yeah, but I know a passage that says, if you're a lawyer or you've got a good job, right, then you're not going to be affected by a famine. So it's not going to be it's not a very good intimidation for some witnesses. So we need to find something else. Ela Amar Rava, Rava says, we tell them something different. Amrin Elahu, we say this to them. Mefitz the Cherev, the Chetz Shanun. Mefitz is not a person who does Chafatzah. Here it means a club, like a stick. The Cherev, a sword, the Chetz, an arrow, Shanun, a sharp arrow. Ish Oneh, Berehu, Ed Sheker. When a man bears false witness against his friend, right? So the stick and the sword and the arrows come when a man bears false witness against his friend. That is also from Mishlei. Top seems to be nice and clear, but we can still object against that too. Amale Ravashi. Ravashi says to Rava about this verse. Yachol LeNeimar. He can also reply to you. How? Shav Shnei Hava Motana. There may be a 7 year plague, right? Plague, like the club, the sword. V'inish v'lo shnei lo shachid. But no man will die prematurely, right? Before his time. So, even though the testimony could lead to not nice stuff going on, a person could comfort himself in the fact that there's a verse that says that a person's not going to die before his time. So, he's not going to be too worried about it. Therefore, Rav Rashi has a different pasuk. El Amar Rav Rashi, Mali Natan Bar Mar Zutra. So I heard, Rav Rashi says, from Natan Bar Mar Zutra, the son of Mar Zutra. Amrin and Lehu, this is what we say to them. Sahade Shakre Egorayhu Zile. Lying witnesses. Ograihu zile are contemptible in the eyes of those who hire them. Right, to testify falsely. Dichtiv. We learn that from a pasuk which says pasuk in Malachim. It says, "Vahoshivu shnayim anashim b'nei Baliel negdo," and let them place two corrupt men opposite him. "V'yaidu laimor," and they'll testify and say, "Berachta Elokim v'melech." Berachta here is a, what's the word when you say the opposite of the meaning? Not a euphemism, like the it's a euphemism, but it's the reverse. When it says berachta, it means he cursed. But we use the word berachta instead of saying he cursed, right? That we inverted commas, he blessed Hashem and the king, right? Meaning he didn't, he cursed him, right? But we don't want to say such a thing, so we use the reverse. So what happens? So here we're talking about the case in Malachim where Ahab wanted the field of Navot, the Israelite, and Queen Jezebel came up with different ways of getting it. And one of the ways she said is that let's get two people to testify that he cursed Hashem and the king, and then we'll put him to death and you can take his field. Right, and that's what happened. And it wasn't a very nice situation, but Ahab was a very wicked king. Tov.
What finally happened?
I think that's what happened. They put him to death and he took his field.
Well, weren't they eventually punished? I don't know.
You have to homework to look up in Kings and see what happened. Come and tell us tomorrow. Tov. Next. Now, back to our Mishnah. Mishnah says, "Im amar hu amar li." If he said, right, if the witness says, he told me. Right, we said that if the witness says that he heard directly from the mouth of the defendant that he was liable, it doesn't help, it doesn't mean anything. Ad shamru b'faneinu, until he says before us, hoda lo shehu chayav lo matanzus, until he says that he admitted to him in our presence, right, the defendant admitted to the plaintiff in our presence that he owed him 200 zuz, right? So we can learn from this. So Gemara says like this, Masayei leilo Rabbi Yehuda. This supports what Rabbi Yehuda said. The Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Amar Rav. Rabbi Yehuda said in the name of Rav. Tzarich sheyomer atem edi. Rabbi Yehuda says that he needs to say, you are my witnesses. Right? Like you mentioned earlier, that even though he said it in the presence, and the Mishnah just appears to say, doesn't say that he needs to say it, to say directly, and you are my witnesses. But Rabbi Yehuda says he does. And the Gemara says, you can learn that from this Mishnah. Even though the Mishnah doesn't say it specifically, you're going to see that the fact that he said in our presence, b'faneinu, implies that he indicated that we were the witnesses. Because otherwise you don't need the word b'faneinu. Otherwise the Mishnah could have just said, he said to us, or we heard him say, in front of him, that he was liable to him for 200 zuz. So what's a b'faneinu in front of us? Well, obviously it was in front of us if we heard it. So the fact that the Mishnah says in front of us means that, according to Rav Yehuda, the support for the fact that it means he indicated that we were the witnesses, the fanenu, right? We were part of the proceedings here. We didn't just happen to be bystanders who just heard it in passing. It was said deliberately in front of the fanenu. Itmanami, also it was said, Amar Rabbi Chiya ba Abba, Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Chiya ba Abba said, and then Rabbi Yochanan, Manali biyadecha. If someone said, you owe me a mana, Manali biyadecha, it means my mana is in your hands. My mana is a port. Here, mana is used to mean 100 zuz. Literally, mana means a portion. But it's often taken to mean a maneh is 100 zuz. So if someone says, maneh li, my 100 zuz is in your hands, it means you owe me 100 zuz. So here, one person is saying to another, maneh li biyadecha, you owe me 100 zuz. Right? And he said it in the presence of two witnesses. Amar lo, hen. And the other one said back to him, yes. Right? So that's the scenario. There's two witnesses standing there watching. One guy says to you, you owe me 100 zuz. And the other one says back to him, yes. Lamacha amalo, tenehuli. The next day, amalo, he said to him, tenehuli, give it to me. Right, so the first day, he admitted he owed you the money. The next day, he says to him, give me the money you owe me. Right? And the same two witnesses were there watching. Amar Meshateh Ani Bacha. If he says, I was joking. Meshateh Ani Bacha. I was joking to you. Right? When you said yesterday that I owe you 1,000 to 100 zuz. And I said, yes. I was joking. I didn't mean it. Patur. He is patur. Why is he patur? Let's have a look at Rashi. Patur. Have a go. Even though, Rashi says, Sheshemu Edim Edmol, that two witnesses heard yesterday, Shehodala, they admitted to him, Huil Bala Ama Atem Edi, since he didn't say, you are my witnesses. That's the reason here. The reason here is not because we believe necessarily that when he says on the second day, I was joking, it wasn't true, that we believe the second statement and get rid of the first. We believe he was actually really joking. We believe the second day, and we don't believe the first day where he said he was liable. It's not for that reason. As she says, the reason here is because he never designated them as witnesses. And that's the reason he's patur. Meaning, if he did designate them as witnesses, and then the second day, this guy comes along and says, nah, it was a joke. So we make him liable. He's not patur. Okay. Tov. Tanya Nami Chachi was also taught the same thing in the Braita. Manali biyadecha. If someone says, you owe me a maneh, 100 zuz. Amar lo hen. He says to him, yes. Lamacha amar lo tenehuli. And on the next day he says, so give it to me then. Amalon, he says to him, Mashata ani bacha, I was just joking with you. Patur. Exactly what we just learned. Right? He is he's not liable. Why? Because he didn't designate them as witnesses. Right? That's the key thing. Vlod, and even, and vlod means and odd. Vlod, and more. Not only that. Ella afilu hichmin lo aidin achorei gader. Even if he, the plaintiff, right, hid the witnesses behind a fence, behind a partition, right? So they could listen in, but the other guy didn't know they were there. Amar lo manali biyadech, and he says to him, "Give me that money you owe." Look, right? I'm gonna get him now, right? I'm gonna get two witnesses. What's that called? Entrapment. Right, I'm going to get two witnesses to witness this. Hide behind there. I'm going to ask him, and then I've got two witnesses because he's never going to admit it in front of you. But right, and we say to him, you owe me a maneh. I'm alohen. He says, yes, I do. And then he says, Ritzoncha shetodeh bifnei ploni and ploni. Would you admit that in front of ploni and ploni? Amalon, he says to him, Mitchara ani shema tachfeini ladin. He says, no, I'm worried that if I do admit it in front of them, you're going to take me to Beit Din. Lamachar amar lotanayuli. And on the next day, he says to him, give me the money you owe me. And then Amalon, he said to him, Mishata ani bachar, I was just joking, patur. He's free. Why? Oh, and because ve'ein to'in lemesit. Tov, I think, let's just leave that last line. Before we get to the ein to'in, Pator, he is unliable. Even in this second situation. So what's the difference? The first situation, he didn't appoint them as witnesses. So we say, so he was only joking because he didn't mean it. There was no witnesses. He didn't appoint them as witnesses. But in the second situation, we dafka ask him, if I had witnesses here, I really do, they're hiding behind the curtain. If I had witnesses here, would you admit it? And he says, I would, but I wouldn't do it in front of witnesses because I don't want you to take me to Beit Din. Meaning he knows that he admits that he's not joking. Like, clear from his words that he's not joking. He knows that he's deliberately saying that he owes the money. Even in that case, when he later says, I was joking, we go with that because there was no witnesses appointed. Tov. Tomorrow finishes off this by saying, Tov, we'll leave that tomorrow because then we go into a next. The Ein Meis Tonim Lemesid is really the next section, so add can till tomorrow.
Can't trap for enticing of a voice.